dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single-family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and I'm thrilled and delighted to have with me today Benny Cass. Hi, Benny.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you so much. You're a Washington institution, and I've been wanting to have you on for a long time, and it just hasn't worked out until today. But today you're in a conference, and you're calling in, aren't you?
I'm calling in because I'm standing in some secluded spot in the convention center at the CAI Expo, where this afternoon, in about an hour, I'm talking about insurance liability.
You just gave us a talk in Louisiana, in New Orleans.
Right.
And that's what you're going to talk to us about today. And you said the title of your speech was commando is not necessarily a dirty word.
That's correct.
And you concluded with a sentence that really got to me, Benny. And it said, you said representation of commandos can actually be fun. It gives the attorney clear insights into the mindset of the opposition and clearly gives the attorney better insights for representation of other associations. What have you learned, I think? I guess, you know, how has it changed you? How have you changed your outlook?
Well, there, unfortunately, a lot of the lawyers who represent community associations, whether they're condos or, you said in your introduction, co-ops or homeowner associations, see things in black and white, and things are not black and white. There are two sides, sometimes three sides to every story. And what it's taught me is that associations aren't always right, and individual, the so-called commandos aren't always right. So it's taught me a kind of an insight on understanding both sides and trying to work out a reasonable solution to problems short of litigation, which sometimes works, sometimes don't. For example, I was talking today at this expo to a representative of the Montgomery County Commission on Common Ownership Interests, which does work. It gives an opportunity to unit owners, boards, and others to go to a governmental function for mediation, for actual trials. They're the only one in the country. I think there ought to be more of these because people ought to be able to sit to a mediator or an arbitrator and try to work it out without having to spend an incredible amount of money on lawyers.
You actually came out, you don't necessarily endorse arbitration. I read one of your columns where you said you've changed your mind, really.
Well, I changed my mind on arbitration in general because there's been studies. First of all, as a lawyer, I like to be able to get discovery. I like to be able to cross-examine. I'd like to have the rules of evidence apply. In arbitration, it's all really subject to the arbitrator. And too often the arbitrator is told, don't write an opinion when you make a decision because the only way you can challenge an arbitrator throughout the United States is if the arbitrator is arbitrary or capricious. And if he doesn't or she doesn't write an opinion, you don't know whether he or she has been arbitrary or capricious. So that's why I don't like it. Furthermore, Consumer Union just came out about 6 months ago with a study which indicated that arbitration, we used to think it was cheaper, but it's not necessarily cheaper.
It's not.
Having said that, though, the mediation-arbitration concept of the, for example, the Montgomery Commission, I'm not opposed to it. I'm just saying that it's an option. It's certainly, in that particular case, is usually cheaper than going to court and faster.
The Montgomery Commission. But that's sort of, you know, the person who I guess claims to have takes credit for conceiving that idea was Dot Sager, and you know who Dot Sager
sure,
is.
Sure.
And I talked to Dot. She's not happy with the outcome of it because apparently, typically the outcome is in favor of the association.
Well, I haven't done studies and statistics on it. I've been up before them three times, maybe five times, and I've won three out of four or four out of five on behalf of the individual owner.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I'm very satisfied with it. One case I lost, it was a very close case. I told my client it was a close case, and she decided to go forward with it. But several others I've won. In fact, one was so bizarre that after the hearing examiner actually heard part of the argument, he called both sides up and said, "This is absolutely ridiculous, community association. Change your ways immediately." And we settled the case right then and there. So I'm very pleased with it.
In your paper that you delivered, you talk about a number of different cases, and you talk basically about why homeowners sue their associations.
Yeah.
What's the answer to that?
Well, the basic underlying reason why homeowners sue their associations is because associations are unwilling to compromise or unwilling to move, unwilling to be reasonable. There's a wonderful book by, I think it was Don Budd, several years ago, published by CAI, called Be Reasonable, and I recommend that for everybody to read. Be reasonable. Understand that there are two sides to every issue. Homeowners ultimately sue and spend a lot of money on lawyers' fees in most cases, in many cases, because the board is unwilling to understand that there are two sides to every issue. You don't have to be ironclad in the enforcement of arcane, ridiculous rules. Your Venetian blinds don't have to be 3.5 inches down from the ceiling, you know, things like that.
But yeah, they are kind of ridiculous, aren't they? Well, have you noticed that some of the rules that typically have been written into association governing documents from the year dot seem to be somewhat obsolete nowadays?
Yeah, and unfortunately, if it's in the bylaws, let's talk about just basic condo or homeowner association 101. There's a priority of the hierarchy of power.
Okay.
The first power structure is the statute in the state, whether it's the state of Wisconsin or the state of Maryland or where, Commonwealth of Virginia, wherever you're from. If there is a statute, that has the total priority, total most important. But in most cases, those state statutes are enabling statutes. They don't mandate absolutely everything because they understand, the legislators understood that condos and homeowner association evolve and change. So the next set are the In a condominium, it's your bylaws, it's your declaration. In a homeowner association, it's the CCNRs, covenants, conditions, restrictions of record. In a cooperative, it's usually the articles of incorporation. The next level is the bylaws in all of the these various entities. And the bylaws are the third level, and usually that's the area where it's very important to read and understand it. And the fourth level are the rules and regulations. The rules and regulations generally can be changed and modified often by the board of directors. Sometimes they need the approval of the membership. But the bylaws have to be amended either by a two-thirds or three-quarters majority, and it's sometimes impossible or next to impossible to amend those bylaws. And that's the problem. So then the question is, does the board have to enforce what rules and regulations which they believe are unreasonable or foolish or downright stupid? There are lawyers who argue, yes, they have to. My argument is, no, they don't have to. They should get a sense of the house and say, look, this is a ridiculous rule. We don't think we're going to enforce it. You don't like it, throw us out of office. You don't like it, you know.
Enforce it yourself.
Huh?
Enforce it yourself.
Exactly. And there is, in most states, a business judgment rule that says, some people like it, some people don't, that says a board of directors that's volunteer, that serves on the board, even if it makes mistakes, the court is not going to penalize them if they acted in good faith. How do you act in good faith? How do you exercise good business? Talk to your lawyer. Talk to your manager. Talk among yourselves. Talk to the membership. As I indicated in my article, my speech, in my opinion, 99%, if not 100% of the problems are resolved by communication. And that's the biggest problem. Getting back to your question, why do homeowners sue? Because the board doesn't want to communicate. The board wants to be secret. The board wants to keep everything in executive session, doesn't want to divulge this information. It took the state of Maryland to pass a law to give Maryland homeowners the rights which they should have normally. I have to bring two lawsuits to get access to books and records. Why? Because the board was obstinate.
Just
won another case in Maryland about a month ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
This is not Elizabeth Koenig.
It's identical to the Elizabeth Koenig.
Okay, let's talk about that for a minute, Benny. You know, you talk in your paper about Joe Grillo,
mm-hmm.
and you also talk about Elizabeth Koenig, and these are both cases. Joe is in Virginia,
mm-hmm.
and Elizabeth is in
Maryland.
Would it surprise you to know that after Joe sued his association because he wanted to look at just certain papers,
mm-hmm.
and he won at the Supreme Court level,
mm-hmm.
and subsequent to that court decision, the legislators in Virginia amended the POA and the Condo Act to specifically allow for salary information in the state of Virginia.
In the aggregate. Not individual.
Okay. Now, the following year, Joe Grillo went back to the same board, requested the same information. I think it was the same association attorney. Everybody, all the players, all the actors were exactly the same. Do you know he had to go back to court a second time?
I was not aware of it.
Yeah, he had to sue a second time to see the same information.
Well, one of the things that I have said in my speech, and I truly believe it, is that lawyers too often tell the clients what the client wants to hear.
Exactly.
And not what the client should hear.
Now, in the case of Joe Grillo, and Joe's case was back in the early 90s sometime,
mm-hmm.
in Joe's case, the Virginia legislature acted based on the outcome of the court case. What happened in Maryland? Anything?
No. In fact, one of the reasons that I was able to win the second case is that my client in the second case, which we just won a month ago, wanted to get the individual salaries of the individual employees, and the board of directors and their lawyers said, no, we're going to give you just the aggregates. We don't want to invade privacy. And we said, we're not interested in their Social Security numbers or their addresses,
mm-hmm.
or who they're living with, or, you know, their credit cards. All we want to know is how much of my money is going to pay X, Y, and Z.
Mm-hmm.
And the lawyer said, well, we'll only give you aggregates. We went to court, and we said, Your Honor, the law is the same as it was in the Elizabeth Koenig case. The law hasn't changed. And besides, by way of analogy and comparison, Virginia has changed the law to require only aggregates. It's not in the state of Maryland, therefore we're entitled to it. And the judge said, I agree.
But anybody in Maryland who wants that information is going to have to go to court to get it, right? Right now?
Right. Well, unless it depends on the board of directors. If I'm representing the board, we represent a lot of associations. If I'm representing the board, I'm going to tell them, hey, I'm not going to defend you on this thing. You're going to spend a lot of money on legal fees. And get, you know, and I said in my speech, I got to believe, because I think I talked to Joe Grillo many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If they would have just called Joe Grillo into the office, if they would have called Elizabeth Koenig into the office and said, look, Joe, look, Lee, here's the information. We don't want you to publicize it. We don't want you to think, but you're entitled to this information. Let us show it to you. You know, that would have solved the problem. That would have solved the problem, but they don't want to do it.
They don't want to do it. But so what? I mean, isn't everybody in the association entitled to the same
Absolutely.
Information?
Absolutely. And, you know, as we pointed out, the judge bought the argument, this is not the board's money. This is the individual owner's money. You're spending my money. I have the right to know how you're spending it. Bottom line, simple, you know, no ifs, ands, and buts. But it's unfortunate. Now, maybe one of these days, if there's another lawsuit, and even though from a legal point of view, a decision in the lower court, in the circuit court, for example, is not binding precedent and everything else, but if another lawsuit is brought, maybe the judge will penalize the association for wasting the court's time and require that they pay punitive damages or legal fees because there's been so many precedents already. I'm hoping that's the case.
Well, I hope so, too, because you know who Richard White is, right?
Yeah.
He came out, this is from last Sunday's column, and he's a columnist from Florida, for those of you who don't know, And he does a Q&A column pretty much like yours. And well, you do, you know, you go into a lot of legal analysis and a lot of legal debt about real estate in general. But he does basically associations, and he does real short answers. And one of the questions was, I just bought into this condo, and I noticed that there are all these outstanding fines by the fire marshal and all of these other things with, you know, theft of equipment and fraud. And he comes down really hard on the individual homeowners, and he blames them. He says the association's problems have not sneaked up overnight. The owners are not victims. They have brought about the problems on themselves. You're accountable for it. You're responsible for it. You have to watch over the board members. You have to make sure that you know exactly what the board members are doing. Yet when you get a homeowner who requests information, they have to go to court to get it.
I know. Well, I tell, I get a lot of people who are upset about their boards, and I tell them, you got three things you can do. One is, try to get on the board, mount a campaign, a good old-fashioned political campaign, get proxies, invite people over for coffee or tea or a drink or something, and campaign just like a good old-fashioned political campaign for a member of Congress or city council or county council, and get on the board. Number two, if you don't like it and you don't want to get on the board, sell and get out. Or number three, put up with it and understand that you're just going to be taken advantage of, and that's it. And I don't see any other alternatives.
Good old carefree living, huh?
Good old carefree living, yeah. And as you say, more and more associations, homeowners live in associations. Hello?
Hello.
They want to be able to let somebody else shovel the snow. They want somebody else to be able to come cut the grass and take care of their lawns and take care of their newspapers and their whatnot. And so it's a compromise, but... people are starting to rebel. People are starting to get upset about boards of directors who are on an ego trip. This is the first time in their life they can be called Madam President or Mr. President. And the association
right.
Be damned.
That's right. Well, you also talk about access to board meetings because a lot of them want to be held in secret.
Right.
The Fair Housing Act.
Right.
I mean, you touch on a whole lot of different things, and we could do an entire hour show on each one of these topics. But
well, I unfortunately got to go make a speech to the CAI.
I know, and I really appreciate you taking the time out to come on here. Smoke gets in your eyes. You said that this is probably the next major topic. I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's a California legislature who has proposed legislation banning smoking in individual units.
Now, that gets into a very serious legal question. Does the state have the authority to regulate what's in my particular home? Is my home a castle or no longer a castle? The association certainly can pass not a rule, but a bylaw that says no smoking. They'd have to grandfather those who are already in the units. That's a very serious problem. And that raises the question is, when does the association have to get involved in a problem between two owners? Owner upstairs is complaining about the smoke or the noise or the whatever it is from the person across the hall or down below or something like that. The association, at first blush, probably should stay away from it because it's not a common element, it's not a universal problem. But at some point, the association has to get involved to try to mediate it, to show that they're concerned about it, to show that this is a problem. And in my opinion, if the association doesn't get into these things, they may be held liable.
Benny, why should they get held liable? I mean, you know, you talk about the Reeves case in D.C., and this is where a woman wanted the association to control the behavior of a neighbor.
Right.
And she won in that case. Now we're talking about an association, and by the sounds of things, what you're saying is the association has powers that the state doesn't have. When you say the state does not have the right to legislate what we can do in our own homes, but the association can control that.
That's correct, because what people don't understand, and I have to tell this to my individual clients, when you give move into a condominium or a homeowner association, you give up a little of your rights. You give up those rights pursuant to what's in the bylaws so that the board can regulate where you park your car. The board can regulate, I'm not saying it's right, but the board can regulate how high from the ceiling your Venetian blinds are, what color the drapes are, and things like that. Because the board has been given that authority, the board can sue you if you don't make the condo payments. The board can fine you.
I understand that.
Huh?
I understand that. But, you know, where you can park your car, that's a common element.
Right.
What you do inside your house is not a common element.
Well, the board can regulate noise and nuisance. What you do inside your house is not a common element, but if what you do impacts on the common elements, then the board has the authority to do that. You know, that's what the Reeves case was all about. There were two people who were, one person was burning this woman in effigy, was calling her racial epithets and everything else, and as a result, she complained to the board, and the board did nothing. I mean, that's the old, go back to California. Remember the old, I forgot the case name, Village Green versus Mrs. T?
Yes.
Remember that case?
Yes, Francis T.
Huh?
Was it Francis T, the light?
Right.
Yes.
For 2 years, Francis T lived on the end of a condominium or garden association and said, I don't have any lights.
Yeah.
And the board said, well, we'll study it. Finally, the lady said, the heck with it. I'm going to put my own lights up. Then the board took immediate action, told her to take it down. She took it down, and she was attacked the next night.
That's right.
You know, and it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, hey, board, you're responsible. So, you know, the answer is the board does have some responsibility. You got to walk a careful tightrope. You got to communicate with the members, communicate with among yourself, talk to your lawyer, talk to your insurance agent, talk to your property manager to get a sense of what is right. When do you interfere and when do you not interfere? You know, yes, my home is still my castle, but if I'm making a lot of noise or I'm causing a disturbance which impacts on other people through the common elements, I think the board has a or I'm smoking and it's causing smoke to go into somebody else's apartment, I don't see the difference between loud noise or evil smoke.
Can we do an end run on this? What happens if you have someone who's cooking ethnic food or someone who's grilling, barbecuing meat and the smell of the barbecuing goes into a unit that's inhabited by a vegetarian? Where do we draw the line here, I guess?
Well, I actually had a case like that,
and nothing surprises me anymore.
what turned out is that we couldn't complain about the ethnic food smell, but we could legitimately complain that they were venting this improperly that violated the building codes.
But that goes back to either the builder or the association, right?
Well, the builder is long gone.
I know.
And the association can say, we didn't build it, but we got the association to enforce the building codes and their own internal documents that said you can't vent to the outside. It's got to be vented up in the air. And it worked out to everybody's satisfaction. We didn't have to go to court on that.
But, local municipalities are going ahead and approving the construction of buildings that appear to be more and more poorly built than ever, and you have all of these construction defect problems. I mean, is there a liability, I guess, on the municipality to make sure that if you're going to allow people to be stacked one on top of the other, that you provide them with adequate insulation from each other, whether it's to minimize the noise or the smoke or the smell of ethnic food?
Conceptually and theoretically, it sounds good, but generally you can't sue the sovereign. Generally, the sovereign will say, in any event, that's the building code. As long as they comply with building codes, that's acceptable. So, but that's the kind of thing that the association, let's say there's a smoke situation. Maybe the association doesn't have the legal authority necessarily to get involved, but they certainly can call both sides in and say, look, before we get into a big contest, lots of litigation, lots of expense, isn't there something we could do? Can you smoke on the balcony? Can you, we can put a smoke eater in there. Can you, you know, can you smoke during certain hours or whatever, something that could be worked out. And there are smoke eaters that clean up things like that, you know.
Yeah, but that, you know, that could come also from the neighbors saying, hey, you know, hey, Benny, I know you don't realize that this is what's happening, but when you smoke, it comes up into my room. Is there any way that you can, you know, block it or something? You know, that's something that I think could probably be better resolved between two individuals.
Absolutely, but if and that's where you the board draws the line as to when do we get in. If the first thing I tell my board is let them try to work it out themselves. If they lived in two separate houses, three fee simple houses, who'd they go to? If they can't work it out, they go to the police. They go to the courts.
That's right.
So try to work it out yourself. But if you can't work it out, maybe the board can step in either in an advisory capacity or immediate capacity and say, look, this is going to escalate out of hand. It's going to be litigation. Let's see if we can work it out. You know, and if the parties are reasonable, which they may be and they may not be.
That's right.
It'll work it out. If not, then, you know, then the problem is the one unit owner who's being affected will sue the board of directors saying you didn't do enough on it. And if you're going to sue, you sue everybody. You sue the person who's creating the smoke, and you sue the board. And then the board's got to defend itself, or the board's got to take action, and it mushrooms out of hand. I'm a very firm believer in what I call preventive law. You know, you go to a doctor for preventive medicine, and all too often, whether you're an individual consumer or you're a homeowner in an association, you don't go to the lawyer for legal preventive legal advice. It seems to me that boards and owners should be using more preventive law approaches to avoid the huge expense, embarrassment, frustration of lawsuits.
I absolutely agree with you. Well, I'm right. I've been reading your column for years and years and years, and it appeared to me over time that you had mellowed a little bit. I seem to remember when I first started reading you, you were adamantly in favor of associations. If the board said so, then, you know, it's right. But you've changed. Do you think you've changed? I mean, obviously.
I don't think I've changed. I think association boards have changed.
Okay, maybe that's it.
When I first got into it, I think the associations were more responsible, more reasonable. But now, as I started to represent more and more individuals or even represented boards of directors, I begin to see that some of them are, as I say, on an ego trip. Some of them don't give a darn about the member. They want to be called Mr. President. So I don't think I've mellowed. I think maybe I have.
Okay, well, I just seem to have noticed. Reading your column, it just seemed like you seem to understand the individual's position a little better, or you seem to be, your perspective had changed.
Well, that comes by representing some of these so-called commandos.
So it works, huh?
Right.
Well, thank you. Benny, thank you so much.
I got to run. Thank you very much.
I thank you for coming on.
My pleasure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Well, that was Benny Cass, ladies and gentlemen, and we will be back with Richard Olton. Their deadline is coming up, and we're going to find out what happens, so don't go away.
Well, I finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. it is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Wyndham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olton, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you will not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today is Richard Olton. Hi, Richard.
Hi, Sue. How you doing?
I'm great. How are you doing?
Good.
I thank you for joining us. For anybody who might not know, you are probably going to be the first American going to jail for flying an American flag.
Well,
I hate to put it that way.
You have to check back in the history a long time, I think, to find another.
Yeah, and we don't know of anybody local or recent in recent years. You've been on you're one of my favorite guests. You've been on many times, and you've been having this problem with the Wyndham Association, and I've been playing your ad every week since I got it, which is, what, over a year now?
Yeah, it's well over a year.
Well over a year. And this has been going on, and you're coming up to your deadline.
Yeah, it's been almost 4 years so far. Just a couple more, about a month and a half short of 4 years since it started.
Since
but the
you've been...
end of the month is supposed to be a magic date, I guess, the 28th. So.
And what happens on the 28th?
Well, on the 28th, my wife and I have both been told to basically surrender ourselves to the court. For I got documents from Steve Moriarty, the attorney for the Wyndham Foundation, the other day, and the big words jumped out at me: immediate incarceration.
Is that what he said?
Yeah. Yeah, it calls for incarceration. It's right in a one-page document. That's what he's asking the court for.
And what does he think that this is going to do?
Well, the idea of a show cause order is basically, and it works. I mean, basically, it's designed to put a person in a position where they're faced with indefinite imprisonment or compliance with a court order. In some situations, a person may be able to continue to basically defy an order. But when you've got small kids, and I have 25 employees that are basically, I own my own business here with 25 full-time employees. My wife owns her business with 15, and the businesses are totally built around us. So what happens in a situation like we have is if we're put in jail, It basically destroys a person's life. It's not the question of, gee, it's not pleasant to be in jail. It's more like your house is foreclosed on, your businesses are shut down, your employees are laid off, and that's the situation we'll be in. And, without even getting into the issue of our kids.
I was going to say,
children.
You've got two small children, too. And a third one on the way?
A 7-year-old and a 3-year-old, and a 7-month-old on the way that's coming from China, adoption, right? So, it reaches a point where it's just pretty well impossible to try to explain to kids, why mom and dad would be sitting in jail, and they'd be sitting in, I don't know where. I have no relatives around here, so Child Protective Services, I guess, is probably the only choice.
So the kids are going to go to Child Protective Services?
I don't know what else. I'm 58, and I've said this before, but I'm 58. My youngest brother is 68, and Ava's youngest siblings are kids are finishing college. So we have, and they're in New Jersey. My only relatives are in Florida. So I don't know really whether there's any choice. We have no one else. Of course, the kids would be pulled out in the middle of the school year, and
you don't want to
destroy the school year for the kids. And for a 7-year-old, and that school's a really big event for her. So I don't know how to deal with that and have the kids stay in school and finish the school year. And I don't even know what to do about sending the kids out of town because I have no relatives that are anything close to the normal parenting age for kids of that age. As I said, my youngest brother is 68.
Oh.
So it's a rough spot.
It certainly does sound like a very rough spot to be in. Have you talked to the kids at all about what's happening? I mean, the 7-year-old ought to be able to understand.
Oh, yeah, she seems to be aware, you know, pretty well aware of it all. I mean, she basically says that some people want to make us take her flag down.
No, I've been to your house.
You know, she says, just keep it up, Dad. But, you know, beyond that, she hasn't gotten to any of the subtleties of why anybody would want to tell us to take our American flag down, except that she says they must not like it. So,
well, I've been at your house when your 7-year-old has led us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Sure.
And she does an admirable job.
Oh, yeah, she does a great job.
Does a fabulous job. And she's got this beautiful, crystal clear voice. And so the flag must mean an awful lot to her as well. And you've taught her well.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I think it does. She knows, you know, she knows that she was born in a different country, but we haven't really belabored an explanation of the, you know, the differences at her age in terms of living in, you know, communist China versus here. But, you know, her time will come to understand those differences, I guess.
Are there any differences, Richard?
Well,
you know, with what you go.
I think things are well intended in this country, but often get really distorted. I mean, you throw the baby out with the bathwater, I guess, is what they're doing. You know, they're supposedly protecting freedoms, and you're taking a person that's literally was wounded flying his American flag in Vietnam. I mean, my position was the northernmost position in Vietnam, and I was wounded keeping my flag atop my bunker. and now, all these years later... you know, when I want to fly my flag in my own yard, they're telling me, well, that's such a grievous crime, I guess, that you're going to be incarcerated, and your wife along with you. And, you know, your family will be destroyed, and your business will be destroyed, and you'll lose your house to foreclosure. Because we can't, I mean, we've got a big house. We can't keep making mortgage payments, and we've got to be able to work. And we've got to be able to work in order to keep our businesses afloat. So basically the judge is telling us that I will destroy your lives. I'll destroy your family. I'll bankrupt you if you don't take the American flag down.
You know, that sounds worse than anything that could happen in communist China or any other country, third world country.
We're so free, I guess, in some ways, that we're the only country that would ever dream of penalizing someone for flying a national flag on national holidays. But, you know, the world is strange, and people's definition of what freedom is has gotten really, really distorted. Basically, the judge is arguing that he's defending freedom by incarcerating us for flying our flag. He says that, you know, if he doesn't put us in jail, and his exact words, this is right out of the transcript, if I don't put you in jail, this will be anarchy. We'll have anarchy in the country if you're not incarcerated. Or not, he didn't use the word incarcerated. He said suffer the full extent of the law, but then he told us to bring our toothbrushes, so... But, you know, he used the word anarchy. He used the word that I'm sworn to uphold the Constitution of the country and the Constitution of the Commonwealth. And if I don't do this, we will have anarchy in the streets. So come to court on the 28th, prepared for the immediate and full consequences of the court.
Does it say in the Constitution?
That's his words. I mean, he used the word anarchy. I didn't realize that the other day. I read through the transcript. So I guess I'm an anarchist.
Well, I've been called an anarchist for a long time, so that's okay. You're in good company, Richard.
All right.
But does the Constitution of the Commonwealth say you cannot fly a flag?
No, it doesn't. It probably should say, I guess, that you should be allowed to fly your flag, because one would normally think that, you know, the basic Bill of Rights are free speech and free expression and the free use of private property that you own would certainly include the right to fly an American flag on land you own. in a respectful manner. But apparently that doesn't include that.
You know, they're using your governing documents. They're saying you agreed before you moved in that you would not fly a flag. Yet there's nothing in your governing documents that specifically say you cannot have a flag on a flagpole.
No, but again, when you look back and you think about where homeowner associations came from, it's unpleasant, but it's the truth. Big origin of homeowner associations and major issue for homeowner associations was to be exclusionary. And, we had most homeowner associations that were formed back in the 40s all had racial covenants that said no one can live in this community except a Caucasian.
That's right.
Maybe that should have been a signal then to tell us that what these associations were basically trying to do, they were trying to create a homogenized milk environment where everybody's exactly the same. There's no free expression, no free speech, no free expression of any sort. And it's sort of scary in a way. I mean, the federal government, thank goodness, stepped in and said that states that had race covenants, that those things were had to be voided. But Virginia's you could say conservative, you could say throwback, depending on how you want to phrase it. It took to 1973 for Virginia to decide the race covenants should be outlawed by the Code of Virginia. It was 1973 that they decided that race covenants in homeowner association restrictive documents were deemed illegal. Now, I'm not saying they were enforced up to 1973, but it took to 1973 for the state of Virginia to step up and say, all right, we need to change the law and make race covenants illegal. And as much as one thinks of Virginia as being really conservative, Virginia's about as unwilling to say that, we have a right to free expression of our love of our country by flying our American flag. Far more unwilling to do that, I think, than states that people often laugh about and kid about, like maybe someplace like California. People that are supposed to be a little bit more on the edge in their thinking. Virginia is supposed to be very conservative, very pro-freedom. The origins of democracy arising from all the founding fathers that come from Virginia, but it's not really the real world, I don't think.
No, it's not. But going back to the contract, the sacred contract that we hold, there's nothing in there, in yours, that specifically prohibits your flying the flag or having a flag on a flagpole.
Yeah, no, never was at the time we purchased the land at all.
That's right. But my understanding is that first of all, CC and I stand for covenants, restrictions, conditions, and restrictions, and it seems to me you also said that there are about 30 items listed on your things. Not one of them is a flag. Now, if the developer didn't want you to have a flagpole, wouldn't he have put it in the CC&Rs?
No, he wouldn't put it in there.
But isn't that what you give notice
sure, but,
to?
But the point is that the developer wants to put things in the covenants that will not have any possible adverse impact on marketing. And I think that's clearly proven, but though the judge didn't care to listen to it at all, Judge Harris of Henrico County, I think it was clearly proven by the fact that there were 30-some items, including manure piles, that were specified in the documents, and including manure piles, which were specified as being approved and allowed. So you can have a manure pile, but you can't have an American flag. They're listed there, and then when it came to the American flag, the very first time they ever gave me any written document, I flew it on Memorial Day 1999, and they wrote to me the very next day, we have never allowed the American flag to fly atop a flagpole in Windham, and we never will allow it, as they constitute a visual nuisance, the pole and the flag. That constitutes a visual nuisance. And how can they say the next day after I first flew it that we've never allowed it and we never will allow it if, in fact, they didn't have a pre-existing rule. Of course they had a rule. They just never put it in the covenants because they didn't want anyone to see that rule that might be sensitive to that and not choose to purchase a home in Wyndham knowing that they wouldn't be allowed to fly the flag.
Now, homeowners...
And there are people, you know, my situation, I mean, that was a really material issue for me. I was wounded, literally, raising the American flag, literally. They're not, you know, people say I was wounded in defense of the flag, but they're saying that in a symbolic way. In my case, I literally was wounded putting the American flag back up on a pole. The artillery round had just knocked it down, and I went out on top of the bunker to put it back up again, and a second artillery round came in.
And that's when you got your Purple Heart.
Yeah. And I spoke with Al Gray, retired Commandant of the Marine Corps, a couple of weeks ago, who was my Hill commander as a major at the time. He remembered it well. He remembered me, remembered my flag, remembered my service in Vietnam with him as his senior corpsman. And I talked about the incident with the flag. So, if, you know, if there's anyone who says, gee, this guy's got a really vivid imagination, well, you know, Al Gray is a retired Commandant of the Marine Corps, and he remembers it well.
You've been through the mill. You and Ava have really been through the mill. Now, your court date is on the 28th, which is, what, 2 weeks from yesterday?
Right.
And everything comes to a head then, right?
I'm sorry?
Everything comes to a head then.
Well, for the moment it does. I mean, I personally think I've probably got something between another 4 to 6, perhaps 10 years of legal battles ahead of me.
Really?
But this particular case is coming to a head. But, you know, there can well be other state and other federal cases after this case.
Wow. Now... I guess, do you want people, would it help to have people in the courtroom Friday? I mean, I'd like to come down for that.
Well, sure. I mean, it's a public hearing, and it would be great to have people there.
So anybody listening, in Northern Virginia, because right now, I mean, once I put it up on the internet, you know, the whole country will be able to hear the show. But for those people who are living in Northern Virginia, or who are within driving distance and who want to come down, it's okay, huh?
Oh, sure. And, you know, there's a website if you go on the Internet and look for Henrico County Circuit Court, H-E-N-R-I-C-O. You'll find a website that gives you directions to the court. We'll have a nice picture of Judge Harris on there.
Oh, really?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
And what's... his email address and all is right there, too.
Okay. All right, then I'll put it up on my website also, I'll put up a link so anybody who wants to go there and wants to come down. Do you think that would help, Richard, if the courthouse was packed with your supporters, not the association supporters?
Well, the press is all going to be there. I mean, there's no question about that. So, again, if there's an empty courtroom, then I guess the press will say, well, you know, they locked them up and nobody cared, which is, you know, I'm fully prepared for that if that's the situation. I'm not trying to run a popularity poll, but certainly it's nice to know that people do care.
Oh, I think people care. I think people care.
I know you care.
A lot, you know, last time you were on, my phone and my email was just jammed with people. I mean, people were listening to the show and calling me up. I could hear the show in the background, and they were sobbing in the phone. Really very, very upset about what had gone on and what was going on. And outraged, Richard, outraged.
Yeah, I just pulled up. The website comes right up, and let me tell you what it is. www.co.henrico, H-E-N-R-I-C-O, .va.us/ccjudges. And that will take you right to the website.
Okay. So it's www.co.henrico.va.us/ccjudges.
That's it. CC being for Circuit Court, CC Judges.
Okay.
And that will take you right to a mugshot of Judge Harris.
Ah, okay. No, I know people care. I know that a lot of people were outraged. A lot of people were very, very upset when they listened to the show. They were horrified that, you know, that anybody would be going to jail or could possibly be going to jail for flying an American flag. And I think what really touched them was you know, how this is affecting your kids and your family.
Well, that's something we've got to deal with. I honestly don't believe that we're going to lose our baby over this, but it is a possibility. I think we'll be okay because we've adopted twice from China, and China's rules are adamant that no criminals can adopt. And we're approved by the Chinese government at this point. The baby that we're trying to adopt is the birth child of the birth sibling of our littlest girl, who's 3 years old. The child was brought into the orphanage and abandoned by the mother, who said she's unable to provide for it. And she said that she had left her other child, abandoned her other child. So they, checked back through the records and identified us and contacted us to try to unite the two children. She's three now. We adopted her when she was a few months old. So we're very much looking forward to that. But, the Chinese government could pull the approval based on us being criminals.
And you're criminals because you're flying a flag.
Right.
Flying a flag that displeases the Homeowners Association.
Well.
Oh, boy.
The neighbor behind us was interviewed, and I thought he was going to maybe say something negative. He's on the CBS News here and said, I see it from my window, I see it from my yard, and it looks beautiful.
I couldn't even see it, Richard, the first time I came down.
Yourself, I see it from my yard, I see it from my windows, and it looks beautiful, and the neighborhood is beautiful, and why don't they find something that's truly an eyesore and just leave the flag alone? And that's the guy who lives behind me.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, the neighbors on each side of me actually helped me put it up. So my neighbors are all totally, they just love it. They think it looks great. The alternative would be to have two additional large houses on this little cul-de-sac. The cul-de-sac has three houses. The developer planned to have five houses. I'm talking about large houses. Our house is, 8 bedrooms. So they're large homes. And what we've done instead is we've created a park-like setting.
It's beautiful.
And our neighbors love it.
And, for anybody who wants to see a picture of it, they can go to your website, right?
Right, AmericanFlagTrial.com. And I need to get it updated, but I'm working on it.
You're working on it. anybody who wants to see this visual nuisance, I drove past it not once but twice the first time I came down. I thought I didn't need to bring your address because, hey, it's a visual nuisance. It's up there, right? I figured it would just beckon me like a beacon, but it didn't.
But if you look at it and picture a large 8-bedroom house in that same spot versus a waterfall and a flagpole, and the same thing on the other lot, we'd have another 8-bedroom house because that's the size homes that are in that area.
And so,
So what I've done is I've created, if you were a homeowners association, they'd be bragging about the beautiful common area that they have created. Instead, it's my common area. I've paid for it and I maintain it, and it's an asset to the neighborhood.
Yes, it
and
is.
It is like a park.
It is.
And,
it's beautiful.
And yet the homeowner would basically try to force me to take the pole down and be put in a financial position where I'd have to sell the lot off and build another large house on it rather than have a park.
Which makes about as much sense as homeowners associations. It is insane. It absolutely is insane. Okay, so anybody listening to this who would like to go down and, check the website to get directions, it's next Saturday at what time, Richard?
What is next Saturday?
Oh, I'm sorry, 2 weeks from yesterday.
Yeah, the 28th. It's at 10 in the morning.
It's at 10 a.m.?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so anybody who wants to go down, let's let the whole country and the whole world know that we care. We do care. We really do care. I got calls from all over the place, and I know that people are probably not going to be coming in from, the rest of the country, but those of you within driving distance,
Also, I think when you have a website up that's from the judges are inviting emails. I've never seen anything quite like that, but they've got it here in Henrico County. The circuit court's got an email and, contact us kind of links.
Oh, really?
So I guess, if you want to send the judge an email, I guess you can. It's on here. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, so go again. I'll put that link up on my website this afternoon. But again, it's www.co.henrico, spelled H-E-N-R-I-C-O, .va.us/CC judges. C-C, Circuit Court Judges. Right?
That's it, yes. VA.us/CCJUDGES.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Richard.
It's my pleasure.
I wish you and Ava all the luck.
Look forward to seeing you in court.
I know, you know, that sounds so terrible. Please don't put it that way. I'm not looking forward to it, but I will be there to support you.
Thank you.
And I hope that any of our listeners who want to come down will also, because I think it's important. I know people care. I know they do. They've told me they care. But we've run over our time. So I really want to thank you, Richard.
Okay, thank you.
And good luck to you and
to
your family. And thanks for joining us. And thanks to all of you for joining us. Please stay tuned, because coming up, we flip-flop the show today. Coming up, we're going to have It's Your Turn. And It's Your Turn is where you call in. It is exactly what it says. It's your turn. You can call in, and the number here is 703-560-TALK. That's 703-560-TALK. And tell us what you think. Let's hear some of your comments about what you heard about, you know, from Richard. And stay tuned, because after It's Your Turn, Squire will be here with Night Train, and we'll be back every Saturday from 2 to 3 and 1 to 2 with It's Your Turn. And On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See you all next week. Thanks for joining us.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry?